Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. And say, hey, you got to hear this in free speech because earlier today I recorded a show with Dr. Duke and I thought it was really, really good. And hey, you want to hear this? So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed funded to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Also, send some money to David Duke, put a check or money order or well-concealed cash, and send it to box 188. That is like 88, like the letter H, the letter H. You know the deal. Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. Okay, so without further ado, listen to this show, and I'll be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live across the United States of America, Europe, and the world, this is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio, dedicated to not only the right of people to a free conscience, a free speech, a free life, and is also dedicated to the right of every people to exist, to celebrate their own unique diversity on the earth, and to preserve their heritage, their rights. That's one of the most natural and important human rights of all. And we believe that the effort to increase diversity within nations by mass immigration of very different people into those lands, such as the massive invasion of Palestine by Zionist Jews in that region of the world, does not create love and brotherhood, but creates conflict, hatreds, racism, and other issues. It seems to make sense to allow people to preserve their own heritage, and that's what we stand for here at DavidDuke.com and in this radio program, Free Speech Radio, and this is obviously Human Rights Radio. Dr. Patrick Slattery, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Dr. Duke. I'd like to say a few words just before we get into the substance of the show. And as sure. Right now I'm walking my dogs, and people know I walk my dogs during recording shows, and I do that because I don't have enough time to devote to this without multitasking, without taking calls. Right now we're recording, but often if we're doing your show live, it's during business hours, I have to take calls. And I do this because I cannot support myself. It's so hard to support yourself doing this kind of work. One of the very, very few people who has been able to do this and actually speak the truth. I mean, lots of people can make lots of money if they're diverting, if they're talking about, well, you know, Alex Jones type of stuff. But to really get into the core issue, which is Jewish power, this is a core issue, it is massively difficult. And I don't know of anybody besides yourself who has done this consistently full-time for 50 years. And, of course, it's come at great expense to you. You've made tremendous sacrifices, including being locked up for a year and a half on very bogus charges. And I don't think we should take the time to go into it, but people nowadays, we're seeing that what happened to you was just a harbinger of what's happening to so many people now, just getting arrested and harassed and, you know, legally tormented for trying to speak the truth. And so what I want to say is that you've made tremendous sacrifices throughout your life. Right now, you're facing some unexpected expenses, and I would implore people, implore, that's a strong word, but I would highly suggest that people make a contribution to you. This is a good time to do it. Could you tell them how, and I know it's difficult, probably maybe it just requires a check or a money order or well-concealed cash through snail mail, but how can people contribute to you?
Well, they could send a contribution. I'm sorry, we can't take a credit card. I mean, that's how they want to do it. Of course, they want to do it in the future by even making digital currency and having everybody be controlled that way.
Okay, so how can I send you a contribution?
You know, I'll tell you that. I just wanted to just make this point. And for people like myself, they make a very special effort to prevent our ability to take money the way that money is taken most in the world, which is digitally in this world today. And that's reality. And the idea that they could prevent people from just buying things. It's almost like saying control in gold, like putting some sort of a transmitter in gold or some sort of element in gold that can be detected, and don't let certain people have gold. It's the same kind of thing with the money system today, and the credit card is basically one device that they can control people with. And I have been routinely, ubiquitously, completely blanked out of credit cards. I've lost every credit card processor, these big companies, because I offer the wrong opinions, which is the fact that I challenge Jewish power. That's the reality of it. So they can't give me a credit card donation, so they've got to go to some extra trouble to support me at this point. And my box number is box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. That's the area code, zip code, excuse me, for the box number. And if you want to send cash, check, money order, whatever, it's much appreciated. I'm doing getting some treatments, and I'm also traveling to be able to do that. And it's a big task, but I do believe I'm going to overcome this illness, and I do believe I'm going to be better than ever in the end. But it's certainly a strain right now financially, and I appreciate you urging people to support me and any other people out there who recognize and who believe that I've done great work over the years, read my books or read my articles, listen to this show faithfully. And I appreciate those of you who have been willing and are willing to donate to me and help me at this particular moment. I have insurance, but that doesn't make up the difference, because it's a lot. It's a big task to get the kind of care that you need, and it's very expensive. So anyway, a lot out of pocket in so many ways I can't even explain. But thank you so much for that nice word, Dr. Slattery. Now, let's go into the subjects of the day. I really didn't feel like doing a show today, but I tell you one thing, that I do believe the show must go on. I believe that these truths must get out. And no matter how I might feel at this particular moment, my whole life that way. I might be tired working, burning the candle at both ends like you often do. Dead tired sometimes. But I do the work because the work is so necessary. Because this work is not like, it's not like working for a football team. Whether or not that team wins or not in the long run means very little to society, to your children, to the future, to the country, to the world. But what we're doing, what you're doing, Dr. Slattery, what I'm doing, I do believe is so vital to the world, because there's no other issue more important facing us right now than Jewish supremacy and Jewish hegemony in the world. I was listening to Dr. Jeffrey Sachs earlier this morning talking about Jewish hegemony and how that they began, and they're the ones that started this war against Russia. He didn't even say it in blatant terms. He didn't point out, even though he talked about supporting the Soviet Union, but he wanted to support what was the Soviet Union when it was changing, because the people in the Soviet Union, and that was the name given to Russia by the Jewish revolutionaries that took over the country. What he wanted to do was support Russia and move it toward the West in that way and help them, because they were definitely overthrowing the very basics of communism. They were restoring private property. They were restoring the rights of the Christian church, the Orthodox church in Russia. They were promoting the basic values of the people that the United States and other European countries have shared for centuries, but are now being overturned and disregarded and really, actually, to tell you the truth, perverted and desecrated in our society. And we're seeing beautiful societies both in Europe and around the world, in America, Canada, being transformed in front of our eyes to almost like a dystopian reality. And it's on so many different levels. But the core of it, the axis of it, of course, is Jewish power. That's my opening statement for this show, I think. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I have one quick question. And you said Jeffrey Sachs talking about Jewish power. Did he use the term Jewish at all?
He didn't dare it. But he talked about American hegemony, American power, American war mongering, American effort. And of course, it's not in any way American. Well, it is the United States of America and the might of the American people, the taxpayer money that we have. It's taken the weapons and the technology and so forth that our people have developed over the years. But it's not an America that's involved in this thing for America or for Americans. In fact, one of the most hardest, I guess, concepts for new people to this whole thought can understand is that the American government is not controlled by not the American people in the pivotal positions. It's not controlled, really, in the interest of the American people. In fact, the government has become the enemy of the greater populations that built America and Canada and Europe. It's become the enemy of those people, and it's driving them to an existential crisis, and it's driving them to a loss of their freedoms, to economic desolation and destruction. We see that. You know, I was just noticing the last few days I was reading some interesting financial reports, and they were talking about the fact, listen to this, in the last 6 years, I saw this on one of the big Wall Street websites and YouTube shows, and they pointed out, listen to this, that over the last 6 years, not a single new job, and Americans have lost jobs, have not a single new job, and they didn't talk about race here, but it definitely has a racial component to it overwhelmingly. Not a single, in terms of the job numbers, net numbers, there were no gains in job numbers whatsoever by Native Americans, which is basically saying white Americans, no gains. So the gains that were done in terms of jobs, almost entirely non-Europeans. And a lot of them had come to the country. And unlike the native-born Americans, the people that lived here all their lives, who contributed in taxes, who contributed in the society in so many ways, building up their communities, their schools, their mil, you know, their mil to everything. These people are now the very bottom of the economic rung. And we've seen the same thing. We've seen the middle class, which is the entire rudder of a healthy economy for a country to go well, that this middle class is being eviscerated by the people that control our government, and the billionaire class is growing and exceeding power. And our rights on every level of existence in terms of speech, all the different aspects that we have in terms of our freedoms, the right to get a job based on our ability, our promotion on our ability, our admission to a university on our ability, all that's going away. So we're facing a civil rights crisis in this country, and yet it's a civil rights crisis we can't even talk about. But I say the reason we can't talk about it, or we don't talk about it much, in fact, there's no big concentration on this, obviously, by the media. The media keeps telling us that it's minorities that face discrimination. The reason we can't talk about it is because the one minority that has special privilege in America is that Jewish powerful minority. That's it. But I think that pretty much wraps it up from my point of view on that.
It does. I want to get back to Jeffrey Sachs a little bit. So Jeffrey Sachs is somebody that I've been talking about, well, certainly ever since I came on your show in 2012, and for maybe about 10 years, I was unfairly maligning him because he was a Jew. Usually I'm not unfairly maligning people when I'm complaining about Jews. When I'm bitching and moaning about the Jews, it's usually completely fair. In Jeffrey Sachs's case, I will say this is one case where I unfairly maligned him because he was a Jew, and I'm going to explain why. So I became aware of him in the early 1990s when he was over in – he's over in Moscow, initially trying to advise the Soviet Union on how they could reform their economy the way that Gorbachev wanted to reform the economy. He was giving advice, and then he was there while it broke up. He was actually there in the Kremlin on the day that it was announced that Yeltsin had agreed with the leaders of the Ukrainian Republic and the Belarusian Republic to break up the Soviet Union. He was there meeting with people in the Kremlin at the time. And then, of course, in the aftermath of the breakup, he wound up advising the Yeltsin government also on reforming the economy. And though in the end, the Russian economy was privatized in a way that massively benefited a small number of Jews who became oligarchs to the
great detriment. Yeah, 12 of the 13 biggest oligarchs in the whole country were Jews, and they stole about 50% of the resources. We should give that background for the audience, yeah.
To the great detriment of the non-Jewish people of Russia, the Jews who were non-oligarchs, most of them left the country. They either came to the United States or went to Israel. So it's to the great detriment.
After Putin came to power, they did.
Right. Well, exactly. they were leaving during the hard times.
Well, they were making their money and taking down Russia, yes.
But yeah, they had been leaving even before the Soviet Union broke up. They were leaving. You had the Jackson-Vanik Amendment, but then Gorbachev loosened up immigration, and then they were leaving during the hard times during the Yeltsin years, although some were staying because some were benefiting greatly. But the thing is, the privatization scheme, as it went forward, the privatization minister, Anatoly Chubais, he was Jewish. Other advisors who were sent over from the American Treasury Department, Lawrence Summers, who later became Secretary of Treasury and also later became president of Harvard. You had Peter Orszag, who later became the budget director under Obama and was deeply involved in fleecing Iceland. You had all these Jews. I mentioned the oligarch. And so it was such a Jewish affair. And because Sachs had been over there and he was Jewish, I just threw him into it. And I have become convinced over the past 2.5 years since the beginning of the Russia's special military operation and hearing Sachs talk in general, but also talk specifically about his experience as an economic advisor. I have become convinced that because he says so, he says that his plans were rejected by the United States government, and the privatization scheme that went forward was one that not only was not his, but one that he opposed. And so and I think I'm big enough to admit when I make a mistake. So I did unfairly blame him, and I did unfairly blame him for that reason, because
maybe it was partially deserved, don't you think? Because you think about this for a second. When I heard him this morning, he talked about Gorbachev, which I think was a positive person. Gorbachev didn't sell out the country to the oligarchs. That was an entirely different aspect of operation. But Yeltsin did. And he said in one breath, you know, Gorbachev, and we had the need to help Gorbachev and Yeltsin. But the truth is, Yeltsin totally betrayed and destroyed, you know, Russia, with just basically turning it over to these oligarchs, along with Chubais's Jewish planner, his Jewish chief of staff, just like Biden's had two Jewish chiefs of staff in his presidency. It's that way. So maybe he deserves some legitimate criticism in those areas. I don't know. But at the same time, he definitely has evolved, and he may have had good intentions. But I don't see how, you know, what I was doing during that time, even though I wasn't in Russia. First time I went to Russia was 96, and then I went to Russia and lived there for a few years in 2000 or so, until about 2005. And then I went to Ukraine and so forth and into Europe. But it's like, when I got involved in all these things, every day in my websites and my radio show, which was really just simply a podcast, not based with a network like we have now, I was talking about, you know, this sellout, this robbery, this destruction of Russia every day by these Jews. And I was talking about the heroism of the Russians that overthrew the Jewish communists, restored Christianity, restored freedom, and also dropped the Iron Curtain. And I like what Jeffrey Sachs is doing. I don't think he's more specific. I didn't hear him one time say that, and this is a very powerful point, which we need to make, because it's the way that they lie to Americans about the whole thing and the whole Russian thing. They try to conflate Russia with communism. Yeah, the communists did control the state. But we have to point out that in over the period of since the Second World War, the Russians were slowly and accelerating in their takeover back of the country. They replaced the Jewish oligarchs, they replaced Jewish power, and they began to change the country from within. And they did do a revolution against communism. And it seems like this isn't acknowledged enough to say that they did it. And how can I don't know how
anybody I just want to clarify, because you mentioned after World War II. So overthrowing Jewish power in the Soviet Union, maybe it was a long process, but
yeah.
But when are you timing that process?
I think it really started in more in earnest, and I think it started in its infancy during the Second World War, because Stalin realized that he couldn't bring patriotism into the country.
Health Simple with Colorado Shilajit, fact bit number 2. In Ayurvedic pharmacology, Shilajit is the king, Raja Yoga Vahayana. Raja Yana is one of the comprehensive disciplines of Ayurveda. It comprises of specialized uses of herbal minerals to achieve the optimum state of health. Raja Yana is a path to achieve homeostasis and thus retarding the process of aging and the prevention of diseases. Shilajit stands alone as the king herbal mineral over all other earth-made substances. Within Rasayana, Shilajit is the ultimate substance that improves quality of plasma and blood. Thus, it strengthens and promotes health to all tissues of the body. Legit Shilajit, like Colorado Shilajit, is as the literal Sanskrit translation implies. Shilajit is the conqueror of mountains and the destroyer of weakness.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
And I think it started in its infancy during the Second World War, because Stalin realized that he couldn't bring patriotism into the country effectively without doing the old Russian mythologies and the old Russian values of, you know, the Mother Russia, and that's what's interesting about that issue, and that really evoked a lot of Russian nationalism and made Russians more conscious of it, and then later on, when Zionism arose and Stalin saw these Jews shifting to Zionist and capitalism, same Jews that were communist leaders for a long time, when he saw that, he started realizing that Zionism was a dangerous thing, not simply to Russia and the interests of the Russian people, but to the whole world. Those are just some of my views on that. But I think it's really, really important that we talk about the fact that whenever they talk badly about Russia, why are the Russians to be criticized today? I think that the reason why Russians face criticism and hate from the international media is not because they're communists. It's because they overthrew the communists. They overthrew the Jewish communists, and then they overthrew the oligarchs who tried to take back the country during the Yeltsin years. Would you agree with that? I mean, I think what happened was that the Russians had this revolution. They took over, they replaced the Jewish communists, and then the Jews, through the democratic process and through corruption and this Yeltsin administration, they tried to basically steal the country from the Russian people. That's pretty much my opinion. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so under Yeltsin, Jews stole back the country from the Goyim. The thing is, what's called the Russian Revolution, the October Revolution of 1917, was thoroughly Jewish. The Bolshevik Revolution, we know that there were high profile non-Jews who were involved. Stalin who's Georgian, but I believe at least one of Stalin's wives was Jewish. Lenin was mixed, but you've made it clear that he had a Jewish identity.
He had Jewish in his home. He identified himself as a Jew. He identified his family as Jew. He identified his children as Jewish. And they themselves said that his Papa Lenin always identified himself as a Jew and his family as a Jewish family. Yet at the same time, he was lying, and he pretended to be a Russian, and he would give speeches about how Jews were the greatest people in the world. Isn't that amazing? While he wasn't a Jew, pretending to be a Russian. That's pretty duplicitous. Yeah. I think that's disgusting amount of chicanery there.
And you look at the early Politburo after the so-called Russian Revolution. You had Sverdlovsk, Trotsky, Kamenev, Zinoviev, Kaganovich, and these are people who are just absolutely Jewish. I mean, there's no question about it.
And the biggest mass murderers in the history of the world, in terms of Western countries for sure, are white countries. Were the Jews who ran the gulags, as Solzhenitsyn so aptly puts out in his book, Archipelago 2, where he shows the six top administrators of the Soviet death camps, Yagoda, Berman, and these other Jews that orchestrated the biggest mass murder in the history of the world, which there's nothing about it in the major media, the Jewish media, of course. And that's one reason why that we have to address the Jewish power thing, because as long as Jews have power in media, in government, in the money, the campaign money, in finance, they are able to put their narrative out and basically keep control over the brainstem, so to speak, you know, the very core of the abilities of the brain, so to speak, of our own people. And while they control that brain and affect it so much, they're able to keep us from understanding our own values. It's the same kind of things in nature. You have some certain parasites. I'll give an example. They have a particular parasite by an insect, cricket. And this parasite takes over and literally affects their brain. Now, crickets don't like water, but this parasite must have water to thrive, right? So he infects the cricket. And even though crickets avoid water, they go into the water because their brain's been taken over. I mean, that's kind of maybe a simplistic metaphor, but it's exactly true. They control our brains, and they tell us, oh, massive immigration, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Taking birth control is a good thing, you know, that limiting our births, LGBTQism is a good thing, all these things. So I think that's exactly what's really going on in terms of Jewish supremacy. And, of course, it's the very opposite, extreme opposite of what Israel does for its own people. And, by the way, Israel has the highest birth rate of any quote unquote white country, even though I don't see it as a white country, it's a Jewish country, but it's 3.2 birth rates, which is double, just about double the rest of European mankind in the world.
Right. Right. So getting back to that early Politburo of the, first decade or so after the establishment of the Soviet Russia / Soviet Union, by 1940, Trotsky was assassinated in Mexico City. And he was the last surviving member of the Politburo besides Stalin. Stalin wound up imprisoning and executing everybody who had been in the Politburo with him, Jew and non-Jew. Bukharin, the one great Russian, when we see great Russian, meaning non-Ukrainian or non-Belarusian, he was a Slav, he was a Russian from, the heart of Russia. He had also died, been executed after a show trial. And so Stalin had eliminated all potential rivals, but of course, so many of those potential rivals were Jewish. And so you plausibly could even put the beginning, those seeds of the of taking back the Soviet Russia. So it's from Jews even earlier, even into the 1930s. Now, the thing is, the information even today, getting narratives out, getting information out about Jewish power, Jewish affairs, can be a slow and tedious affair.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Now, the thing is, the information, even today, getting narratives out, getting information out about Jewish power, Jewish affairs, can be a slow and tedious affair. But during the 1930s, when you had no internet and you had very little, even postal communication, even hard copy paper being sent back and forth from the Soviet Union to the rest of the world, very little of that. Telephone links, no. And information went very slowly. And I think even though certainly by the time Stalin died in 1952, perhaps was it a Jewish doctor's conspiracy? I mean, was he killed by his own Jewish doctor?
According to the nephew of Yaganovich and these other Jews, he said that Yaganovich admitted that there was a plot to kill Stalin, and they did kill him to protect the Jews.
Right.
That's one of his books, yeah.
So, you know, That's a possibility. But certainly by that time, the Soviet Union was no longer run by Jews. During the Cold War, it was really no longer run by Jews. But the Soviet leadership was saddled with the legacy of Bolshevik irrational policies. You could even call it insanity if you wanted. But, you know, you had this highly irrational economic system of central planning and state ownership of the means of production. Plus, you had this this system of political repression, which was thoroughly institutionalized at that point. And the new leadership, there's a limit to what they could reform, because why was Khrushchev and the others, why were they legitimate rulers? Well, they were, their claim to legitimacy went back to the Russian Revolution. And, you know, they, how are they going to, what could they do?
So there's a lot of inertia there. There's a lot of inertia demanding.
That's a great word. Yeah. It was an awful lot of inertia. So even though it was no longer ruled by Jewish personnel, it was still saddled with the legacy of a horrible system that had been created by Jews in order to control this non-Jewish country. So what do you think about that?
So I think that's a really good analysis, and I think it's totally apropos and true. And I think that this is kind of the things that – these are the kind of things that the average American has no idea about. I think Jeffrey Sachs knows. I really do. He just knows he can't say it. He did a really great story on the same people who did the Ukraine war, the same people who did, guess what, the Iraq war. And we know who did the Iraq war. And he named them. And they were all Jews. Now, why would there be this alignment between Jewish efforts in terms of Iraq against their enemy Saddam Hussein and their efforts in the Middle East to control the Middle East and with this fledgling state of Israel? Why would there be that connection? Why would Jews also be the ones behind Ukraine? It's because Jewish geopolitical global interests are the most important interests of the United States government. And the media that they control coming out of America and Great Britain and much of the rest of the world, this is their ultimate goal. And they've had a long-running hatred. So everybody's pretty much acknowledging, not everybody, even Jews like Weinstein and others, that Professor Ronstein, who's kind of right-wing on a lot of good things like freedom of speech, even he acknowledges that the truth is that we are literally in a situation where every basic value of our societies are being scrubbed, are being destroyed. And they're lying to us just about everything. And this is amazing when we think about it, when we look at it. And if we don't understand this process, we understand nothing. If you look at the Trump impeachment, for instance, efforts, it was led by Jews every step of the way, and of course, absolutely on the front lines of about doing this was the media. And we're seeing the same thing today. Even though Trump tries to assuage them and kiss their feet, they still have fears of him. And they still, in terms of the most powerful Jews, they don't want him to go back to the presidency. So that's an interesting situation. I don't know if I do, because I'm just so sick of Trump's kowtowing, because he served an interest when he got up and used his voice and his bully pulpit, as Roosevelt would say, his bully pulpit to say, if you don't stop immigration, you don't have a country. If you don't do these other things, you don't have a country. And so I've certainly... Now, that when he did those things, he was like a spokesman. He helped rise the entire movement around the world on these particular issues like immigration and all these other cultural and social issues that are so vital to the preservation of the things that we care about and we love. So what's the story here? I think the story is something that we have to just repeat again and again and again until it sinks into the very thick skulls of people that have been told their whole life these fundamental lies. Russia is not our enemy today. In fact, if anything, Russia and Putin has been the kind of the only adult in the room. And the one thing about Putin where he gets a lot of criticism from even on our side, because he's very cautious. Mm-hmm. He hates the idea that he's got to kill Ukrainians. He hates the idea that there may be a war, and he's trying to avoid a war and taking a lot of crap from NATO. I mean, NATO was and America has actually been behind this invasion of Russia. Imagine if that was going on in an invasion of America, what they would do. But Putin he realizes that although he's had taken these incredible insults and evil, that he knows that a greater European war would be the ultimate evil. It's in game. It's a no one wins type scenario. And in some ways that's heroic. And in some ways it's kind of, wow, a lot of people, he's getting a lot of criticism in Russia and other places because he's not tough enough. What do you think about that?
Yeah, he is extremely cautious. He is taking a certain amount of heat there, to the extent there's opposition to Putin within Russia, it's people who think he's too cautious, that he's been too friendly with the West. He hasn't been quick enough to do things. There's really hardly any opposition to him that he is not pro-Western enough.
How much time do we have left today?
We have, well, for this show, we have about another 15 minutes. And, we can carry it on with another show if you'd like.
That's been a good show.
That's the criticism of Putin, is that he's gone too slow. And you hear that echoed in, say, right-wing dissident circles in America, or other dissident circles in America, that, you know, why doesn't he just finish the job? Why doesn't he, decapitate Ukraine? And, it seems like a good question, but I'm thoroughly convinced that he has been able to be successful because of a de facto, support, a de facto alliance, the economic support of China in particular, but also the rest of the world. I mean, when the sanctions were slapped on him, and the whole pretext, the whole war, this war was just a pretext. I mean, forcing Russia's hand into an invasion was simply a pretext to unleash unprecedented economic sanctions that would lead to Putin being overthrown by his own people. There's no doubt that was the intention of this policy.
And it's Victoria so important Nuland, for us to just talk about the basic facts. We know the United States, and which was Jewish-controlled United States under the Kerry administration and then Victoria Nuland and the rest of these Jews, that they did a coup against a legally elected government in Ukraine to overthrow it. We know that they also wanted this conflict. We know that they started shelling eastern Ukraine and killing, according to Wikipedia, which I think is correct on this score, at least they're not correct on my taxes or whatever, my tax reports for my case, but they're certainly correct in this. I think there's been at least 14,000. There were, in fact, long before Putin ever came in, 14,000 Ukrainian people, mostly civilians, murdered, men, women, and children by shelling. They don't talk about that. And the whole ironic thing about Ukraine is, when we bring it into context, is amazing, because we also constantly hear about things about the Holocaust and so forth in regard to Gaza, in terms of the Holocaust that Jews suffered. They just don't tell you that a much bigger Holocaust, according to Jews, even like Raphael Lemkin, the Jewish scientist who talked about the so-called Holodomor, the starvation of millions and intentional starvation of millions of Ukrainians, as well as executions and ethnic cleansing and all the rest of the things they did, and tortures and so forth of the people. Raphael Lemkin said it very clearly, that it was a genocide, and he invented the term genocide. So it's like we just don't get any clear understanding of anything. And it's ironic, because we've had 600,000, it looks like, according to new information now, out of Ukraine, and Ukrainians themselves are saying this, and Ukrainians in the government have said this, 600,000 Ukrainians, the flower of the youngest of age, population group, young males.
They're throwing boomers into the meat grinder too.
Yeah, they are.
Even people my age, literally, people in their 60s are being thrown up to the front line as cannon fodder.
And you know what we should think about too is that, of course, proportionally, most of these people are teens and very young men. That's where most of the soldiers always are. I think the average age in the Second World War is like 22. And that meant there were some officers and other people in the military for a long time, but the percentage. So you got to think about the fact that when you send young people to battle and you kill them before they reproduce, or when they are in their prime years ahead, so you're not only killing them, but you're killing their genes. You're killing their offspring that they would have had, or their children they would have had, on a massive, massive level. And this is a great tragedy, and it's a horror that's going on. I can't blame Russia for handling it the way they did. They cannot afford, it's an existential threat to have Ukraine part of nature, NATO. They have definitely cannot afford to have nuclear tipped missiles 3 or 4 minutes away from Moscow as a preemptive strike. They had no choice but to do what they did. At the same time, it's such a hard choice. It's such a hard and difficult thing to confront, because I hate to see these lives being lost. And I've had a number of friends from Ukraine that I know today are dead, and I've talked to the family members, and it's a very, very sad story, and who've been conscripted. And the conscriptions are really much more true in the Zelensky regime than it is on the other side of the equation. So there you go. It's a sad situation.
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, regarding Putin and his caution, Ukraine, as you mentioned, in 2014, it was overthrown in this Maidan coup. They called the Maidan Revolution. It was a coup d'etat. It was over. The government was overthrown. Well, that wasn't the first time it had been overthrown in a color revolution. You had the Orange Revolution of 2004, which blocked the inauguration of that same Viktor Yanukovych, who was chased out 10 years later. It blocked his inauguration after he had won an election and forced a new election, in which he lost, and a pro-Western candidate came in. That's in Ukraine. In other former Soviet states, in Georgia, you had the so-called Rhodes Revolution, which forced out President Eduard Shevardnadze, who had been the foreign minister for most of Gorbachev's years. Eduard Shevardnadze was forced out, and a protege of John McCain, of all people, one Mikhail Saakashvili, was installed. And this is in a CIA / State Department sponsored color revolution. You had something similar happen in one of the former Soviet Central Asian states. I believe it was Kyrgyzstan or Kyrgyzstan. So these color revolutions have happened in multiple former Soviet republics. There's no doubt that Putin was vulnerable himself. He could have been vulnerable, and had these types of crippling economic sanctions. Unprecedented. These are unprecedented, where they seized all of Russia's assets, their overseas assets. Hundreds of billions of dollars of their assets were seized. And
many billions of dollars, billions.
Hundreds of billions, yes. This is massive. And of their foreign reserves, they were not allowed to use the SWIFT banking payment system. All sorts of things, just unprecedented. And if this had happened in 2014 to Putin, would he have survived? If it had happened in 2017, after a Hillary administration would have brought on almost certainly Victoria Nuland, the Secretary of State. It was widely rumored before the election that she would be Secretary of State. And she's the architect of this. Had it happened in 2017, could Putin have survived? Maybe not. But the reason he could survive in 2022 was because by that time he had spent from 2014 on, he had been trying to sanction-proof the economy. So he had all those 5 extra years to sanction-proof the economy, to develop a stronger relationship with China. China was much stronger. It gained a lot of strength in those 5 years. And so with the help of Chinese backing, and then also good diplomacy, which secured the backing of all sorts of other non-Western states like India and Brazil and Indonesia, big, important countries, alternative markets for Russian energy and other products, he was able to survive this. But the thing is, in order to secure the backing of countries like China or India or Turkey, Turkey's another important one. These are countries that have their own ethnic minorities who would like to change boundaries. So for China, for instance, it's not easy for China to support, say, Russia just annexing parts of Ukraine, right? Just right off the bat, annexing parts of Ukraine. This is tough for China when it's got in the Xinjiang region, it's got the Uyghurs who have an independence movement. You've got potentially, China, Taiwan and Hong Kong. India's got, possibly in the Punjab and in Kashmir, it's got issues. Turkey's got issues with Kurdish separatists. And so I think this kind of go slow approach was necessary for Russia to maintain the international backing that it absolutely needed in order to survive and overcome the economic sanctions. And I don't think
time do we have left of the show, Doc?
We got another 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay, well that's good, because I thought about a concept that you're elucidating to, and I would like to continue that concept on a little bit. And you were talking about the fact that, how they, and this is exactly the modus operandi of the so-called American, the Western establishment. It's the Jewish establishment. And this is the main tool they use in terms of eviscerating countries that they oppose and being able to divide and conquer those societies. And that is by weaponizing the minorities within those countries against the majority element. A good example is how Jews have supported the Kurdish against the Turks, because they don't want a really powerful Turkey just north of Israel, for sure, you know, and a very powerful military form as well, which was part of that same effort against the Soviet Union at one time. In Lebanon is a perfect example. Moshe Sharet, one of the prime ministers of Israel, wrote a book called Sacred Terrorism, and where he pointed out that Israel very cleverly and exacerbated with lies and false flags and all sorts of contrived operations, false flag operations, they contrived to exacerbate and to cause fighting.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaste by Mynutra. Why is hempaste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like hempaste. Hempaste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy Hemp Paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
And where he pointed out that Israel very cleverly and exacerbated with lies and false flags and all sorts of contrived operations, false flag operations, they contrived to exacerbate and to cause fighting and hatred between the Muslims of Lebanon and the Christians of Lebanon. It's interesting to say, though, that they did not succeed. The Christians and the Muslims are really together now. And most of the Christians in Lebanon, I know many of them myself, they understand that Hezbollah, actually, and the Muslims are guaranteeing their freedom. And by the way, when the Jews invaded Lebanon, Lebanon's about half Christian, and when they invaded Lebanon, they killed so many children. A lot of the first and greatest massacres were from the southeastern parts of Lebanon, where they had a large Christian population. And there's a lot of Christians there. And so they wanted to inflame things. And look what they did in terms of Lebanon, the Shatila massacre, when the Israeli government inflamed these Christian groups to go in and kill Palestinians, mainly women and children, by the way, which also caused a lot of hatred again with the two groups. So, and in America, we've seen the same thing. The Jewish elite, the New York Times, has told black people every day in this world that how evil white people are and how evil colonialism is and all this again and again and again, even though if you look historically, there's been all kinds of kingdoms both in Africa. There were Zulus in Africa that conquered other tribes. There were Aztecs in Mexico. There are Incas in Peru. I mean, there are Indian tribes in constant warfare with each other, expanding and contracting with the battles that they've been holding. Europe was invaded by Genghis Khan. Europe was invaded by Attila the Hun. I mean, Europe was invaded by the Ottoman Empire. It's not just the Crusades that these invasions. In fact, the Crusades happened after the invasion of the Iberian Peninsula in Spain, right? So it's like what they really tried to do is inflame any of these other groups with hatred as means of getting people's eye off the ball. We got the same thing going on in Britain right now.
Yep. It's time to wrap up the show, but if you want to continue on another show, we can do that.
Well, I can do it day after tomorrow on the show live. I think I'm ready to end up. I'm a little bit tired right now, but we had a great show. And it's really interesting to wrap all these things together. You have one last comment about that, about how isn't it interesting, all these things you're talking about. It just, like, for instance, with the Eastern Ukraine and Western Ukraine, with the Russians and the other Ukrainians, they're all the same DNA, basically. The Russians really aren't a different people, but they've demonized the Russian people as part of the process of divide and conquer. And they do that all over the world.
It's a tragedy, but I think Putin's thinking is that if there are things that he ultimately has to do, but it has to be clear that he's doing them as a last resort. And so that's why he's going slow to make it obvious that to the extent he annexes territory or whatever, it's a last resort after he's already tried everything else.
I believe that. And I think he's also knowing that if you fight a war that way and you prepare it well, good with your artillery ahead of time and so forth, you end up having a lot of your own surviving. And he wants those Russian kids to survive. He doesn't. Really, he's fighting a war like you have to fight a war against those forces of the enemy. Anyway, we're out of time, folks. Go to davidduke.com, box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana. You can write to me, and you can send me a little bit of support right now. I could really use it, my friends. And you can also go to my Gab at Real David Duke and my Odyssey at Real David Duke. And that's easy to find and watch my original videos. And also, you can support Dr. Slattery on this show, obviously with me quite often. And you can also hear him on the great broadcast network, Republic Broadcast Network, that's doing such a good job. Thank you so much, and please support Rinse Radio as well, naturally, our network here. Thank you, Doctor. See you later, my friend.
Thank you, Dr. Duke.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. I've got to wrap it up. Tomorrow, I believe tomorrow, will be more on this issue, but just with me, a boomer vision on why communism was better than what we've got now. You'll have to tune in tomorrow. And I'll be back again with another exciting episode of National Review.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off Drop-and-Lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off Drop-and-Lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease Off, LLC. 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.